Hey, everyone, welcome back to the Hardware News Recap for the week. And this one, some very important news. Jensen Huang has sold his leather jacket. One of them. It's probably got like a whole closet full. He opens it up and he's like, do I want the crocodile skin one this time with the ray tracing, or do I want the normal one? And he sold the normal one for $1 million. That's right. We're talking about the important things here. Additionally, SK Hynix's CEO, while holding tissues made of money, tearfully told everybody that the memory shortage might persist until 2030 or beyond. This is sad news if you're SK Hynix, which makes barrels of money from the memory shortage. In other news, China has seen a surge in chip exports. The US government says, hey, give us money, please, to SK Hynix and Samsung. And there's been some pretty cool mods online recently, including someone who's converted Steam library games into playable, socketable game cartridges. It's really sick, actually. I really liked it. So we'll talk about that too. Before that, this video is brought to you by Thermaltake and the TR200WS Micro Chassis, a micro ATX stout case. It includes an optional 5 1/4 bay for either a screen or 5 1/4 drives. The case has a highly perforated side panel, a color accent front styled like other popular cases, can fit radiators, and closed loop liquid coolers in the top, up to 360mm claimed support, and a total of 7 120mm fan mounting locations between the top, bottom, and rear of the case. Max CPU tower cooler clearance is claimed at 175mm and GPU clearance at 365mm. The chassis provides a portable, highly compatible box for your builds. Learn more at the link in the description below. Let's start with the most important news. The world's eighth wealthiest man, Jensen Huang, worth an estimated $154 billion and CEO of NVIDIA, sold his secondhand clothes online last week. He's just like the rest of us. The NVIDIA CEO has auctioned off one of his $10,000 Tom Ford leather jackets. The description elaborates, quote, for more than a decade, Huang wore the jacket during NVIDIA's landmark product launches, developer conferences, major announcements that helped define the rise of artificial intelligence, and yes, even while eating Zhajianmian noodles on a street corner, end quote. Yes, just like a human would do, even while eating Zhajianmian noodles on a street corner. Quote, this is not only a jacket, it is a uniform of a first believer, a symbol of his leadership style, embodying authenticity, ingenuity, persistence, courage, and joy. It has become a symbol for the vision at the forefront of the AI revolution, end quote. If the LLM that wrote that could gag, it probably would. The jacket sold for almost $1 million at auction, climbing 10x in its final 24 hours and reaching a final selling price of $960,000 after 65 bids. Or, converted to PC DIY metrics, two sticks of DDR5 6000. The proceeds of the auction will go to the Edge Institute, which is described as a, quote, nonprofit that convenes people working at the frontiers of tech, science, culture, and society in pop-up villages, end quote. Now, that might be a good cause. We're not really familiar with it. Unfortunately, though, NVIDIA's recent past with nonprofit organizations does kind of call some things into question, like the money circle with the Huang Foundation, but that's a different one, so we're not too familiar with this one. But anyway, that's where the money went. But there's more. NVIDIA isn't just dropping off its jackets at Goodwill. They're also commemorating their prior paper launches with actual paper launches. As part of the Summer of RTX campaign, the company is now making these GeForce trading cards. We guess the GeForce marketing team needed something to do, considering the only reason any of them still have jobs is because NVIDIA forgot that it has a GeForce marketing team.
I looked into it more deeply, and I found that apparently what happened is that he was laid off 5 years ago, and no one ever told him about it. But through some kind of glitch in the payroll department, he still gets a paycheck.
So we just went ahead and fixed the glitch.
Great.
The trading cards chronicle NVIDIA's history of GeForce cards, and the company will be doing giveaways throughout the summer. That's right, you can't buy NVIDIA's graphics cards, and now you can't buy their paper cards either. We're looking forward to their most collectible mythic rares, like Missing Rops, an instant that causes 10% of performance to randomly disappear. We also hope to pull a paper launch sorcery, false competition, or, my favorite card of all, Jensen Bubble Maker. I've needed this card to complete my green deck for years now. It's like literally missing one piece. It's 59 cards. I've been looking for this one everywhere. It's finally here. Guys, I can't wait to open this and get a pull on stream. Let me show you the card. It's awesome. Jensen Bubble Maker is a legendary creature type, subtype ass kisser. You can tap Jensen to take control of target opponent's target creature, and you can untap him at any point to force target opponent to take control of target opponent's target creature that you previously targeted to take control of. If you tap Jensen Bubble Maker again, you can retake control of target opponent's target creature that target opponent took control of that you previously targeted. And for one green, if targeted creature goes untapped for more than one turn, lease target creature back to target opponent for a fair market rate. Then tap Jensen Bubble Maker. Graveyard is now renamed to Juan Foundation, and destroyed creatures become donations. Each donation generates one green mana. Finally, you can pay 5 green mana, take money from outside of the game, and give it to the President of the United States. Wait 6 months, then win the game. That last one might be overpowered, but Wizards of the Coast has always been really good about balancing the... Let's move on. Up next, even a man whose jacket is worth more than... Let me just check. We actually did look this up. Double the median retirement savings in some states. Even he has to follow the law. Asterisk. Despite NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang dismissing concerns about AI GPU smuggling to China.
People talk about smuggling, but it's incredibly hard to do. And it's we chase down every opportunity, every single time that somebody's reported something, and it's just not been true.
The US government has pressured the company to reduce GPU smuggling to China. What this essentially means is that more than half of NVIDIA's previously authorized customers in Singapore, Malaysia, and Japan reportedly no longer qualify to buy AI GPUs until they pass the new compliance process. This is all according to a report from the Financial Times, which writes that, quote, the moves reflect a broader U.S. effort to close loopholes in export controls that have allowed advanced AI chips to reach China through third countries despite years of restrictions, end quote. This, of course, follows our documentary detailing the prolific amount of NVIDIA GPUs we found being smuggled, exiting the US or elsewhere and going to China, and our trip to Washington, D.C. The publication reports that, quote, specialized cloud platforms purpose-built for AI workloads, end quote, were among the companies most impacted. According to the Financial Times, NVIDIA now has to send NVIDIA employees to inspect NVIDIA customers to make sure that everything's above board and no one's doing anything wrong. We actually obtained a clip of NVIDIA's employees doing exactly that.
Nothing to see here.
Fortunately, it doesn't seem quite so simple, with the Financial Times also writing, quote, the U.S. Department of Commerce is also involved providing oversight, end quote. That's good. Hopefully the head of the U.S. Department of Commerce isn't preoccupied and can provide the oversight needed.
And we had lunch on the island. That is true.
Let's move on again. Up next, the U.S. wants money from memory manufacturers. That's right. Yes, we could do it this way, too. It's not enforced the antitrust laws. Speaking of the Commerce Department, the U.S. government has pioneered how to take money from NVIDIA and AMD, and now it's time to take money from foreign chip makers, too. According to reporting from the Korea Times, the U.S. wants a share of profits from South Korean memory manufacturers Samsung and SK Hynix due to strong demand from U.S. companies. Citing an unnamed industry source, the Korea Times said the topic came up during a meeting between the U.S. and South Korean trade officials. The outlet quoted the source who provided context for the U.S. request, saying, quote, that was based on a rationale that American companies purchased large volumes of Korean semiconductors and thus contributed to the Korean firm's earnings. So, if the Korean chipmakers' partner firms in Korea are entitled to parts of the profits, the American ones are too, end quote. That's some backwards-ass logic. It's like eating at a restaurant and then standing up and saying, you're welcome for my business. Now give me a cut of the profits from the order that I just placed. The capitalism isn't capitalizing. The Korea Times corroborated the claim with a ranking government official, they say. U.S. officials from several agencies did not reply to requests for comment. South Korea's exports have increased dramatically during the AI boom. According to South Korea's Ministry of Trade, Industry, and Resources, South Korea's exports in June climbed 70.9% year over year to more than $100 billion. Semiconductor exports increased by about 200%. Further, the South Korean ministry said that semiconductor exports topped $40 billion for the first time on, quote, strong memory demand and higher memory contract prices, end quote. Memory manufacturers are getting rich from the global AI data center frenzy. Samsung and SK Hynix set earnings records in the last quarter, and along with Micron, all three major memory manufacturers have around a $1 trillion market cap each. And in relation to all that, we just posted a deep dive into the latest antitrust action that's attempted to be taken against the memory manufacturers. It's on the channel already. That is about the DRAM cartel again, except now it's the new reformed and revised one, allegedly, based on the lawsuit's claims and what everybody can see with their eyes. Up next, there's a surge in exports for chips from China. The South China Morning Post reported that China's chip exports have almost doubled in the first half of 2026. According to the South China Morning Post, China's customs agency said the country exported 179.44 billion integrated circuits for about $177 billion, an increase of 96% year over year over these 6 months. The outlet said the, quote, surge in IC exports was one of the key drivers behind China's double-digit export growth in the first half of the year, alongside robust overseas demand for industrial robots and other high-tech products, end quote. China isn't exporting advanced AI GPUs worth thousands of dollars each, like NVIDIA's GPUs are, but exports a lot of relatively cheap integrated circuits, in addition to things like their Ryzen DRAM from CXMT, which lately has seen particular success. We have a separate documentary on them if you're curious about what or who CXMT is, but that's China's main DRAM manufacturer right now. It's up and coming. They've seen some success recently, but in addition to that, at 180 billion ICs cited and $177 billion, you're close to, on average, like a dollar per IC. ICs are lots of different things. It can be as simple as a microcontroller for an RGB device or something like that, or obviously much more high-end. But China has encouraged its companies to use homegrown semiconductors as it tries to wean off of foreign technologies, largely due to unreliable availability. In May, Nikkei Asia reported that China wants more than 70% of silicon wafers used by its chip makers to be manufactured domestically. China's government also has spent billions to develop its domestic chip industry, especially lately. Meanwhile, U.S. companies face export controls and commercial restrictions when trying to sell advanced AI chips to Chinese customers. For example, late last year, President Trump said that NVIDIA would be allowed to ship H200 chips after saying they wouldn't be allowed to ship them to approved customers in China. The U.S. government further clarified the rules in January. However, a Commerce Department official recently said that NVIDIA has shipped, quote, very few, end quote, H200 chips to China and Hong Kong, and China has likewise expressed disinterest in them. SK Hynix's CEO said that the industry's problems aren't ending anytime soon, telling Reuters, quote, we forecast that next year will be the worst year in the industry's history from the supply perspective, end quote, in the Reuters report. Naturally, he was devastated. Here's a clip from the press conference. Elaborating on the issue, the CEO stated, quote, our customer demand continues to go up while our capacity has limitations. We still forecast that customer demand will remain higher than our supply capacity even beyond 2030, but we're doing our best to solve the problem, end quote. This echoes what Jensen said in June about the memory shortage lasting for several more years. On June 24th, in its third fiscal quarter report, Micron also said, quote, we expect tight conditions to persist beyond calendar 2027 as a result of AI-driven demand, end quote. And this is all in spite of the news that we covered recently about SK Hynix and Samsung both planning to double their capacity in Korea within the next 5 to 10 years or so. A Citrini researcher who goes by Zephyr on Twitter estimated that even after memory manufacturers more than double wafer production over the next few years, demand would still outpace supply. Part of the reason for this, he explains, is that HBM is more intensive to manufacture compared to traditional memory, with the researcher writing, quote, HBM dies are about 35 to 45% larger than equal capacity DDR5 dies. Now, there's more to it than that, of course, so regardless of those figures, even just in our own previous reporting working with analysts, we learned that for DRAM, you might have 2.3 to 3 times the total wafer area at the end of the production process for HBM than you would for traditional DRAM, which includes yield losses. As a separate example, different issue entirely, there's also a logic die and an interposer that aren't necessary for traditional DRAM in the same, interposers you just don't need. They're not mounted to the same thing. So these are all different costs and production challenges. But anyway, the researcher estimates that by 2030, memory demand will reach 157.5 exabytes, while manufacturers would only be able to supply about 128.8 exabytes. These figures, however, take into account Chinese exports, like with CXMT, for example, or Zhongxin Memory Technologies, where their contributions to the overall global supply now have been steadily increasing. But US congresspeople are urging the administration that the Chinese memory should be banned, as seems to be the response to really just about anything competitive right now in the technology space. We've covered that in our Rise of Chinese Memory documentary, if you're curious about that. This is despite, though, companies like Apple urging the US government to allow them to source supply from Chinese companies like YMTC, which the US banned the last time Apple asked about that, and CXMT, which the US banned last time there was market interest in that. The last time Apple tried to use a Chinese supplier, again, YMTC, it was when YMTC was really stepping up its NAND game for flash, for storage, like SSDs, and they got pretty competitive to the point that Apple wanted to use them, and that seemed to put a target on their back. In a bipartisan letter, Congressman John Molinar and George Whitesides wrote U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, stating, quote, "Dependence on Chinese memory manufacturers creates an unacceptable risk for U.S. national security, economic security, and supply chain security. Leading Chinese memory manufacturers are all closely intertwined with the Chinese military," end quote. You could say exactly the same about Micron and the U.S. military because, you know, that's where they buy their memory from. Up next, we've talked a lot about how the rising RAM prices are affecting PCs. For example, about 30 seconds ago, you probably remember that one, but other times too, but also 45 seconds ago or so. But it's also having a dramatic impact on smartphones. Co-founder of Nothing, Carl Pei, recently tweeted, quote, "Memory is now the most expensive component in a smartphone. It's more expensive than the processor, more expensive than the display, and can account for more than 50% of the total hardware bill. For Phone 4A, memory costs have doubled between when we decided to build the device and when it launched. They've doubled again since," end quote. We guess that means that they have nothing to worry about. You see what I did there? The co-founder elaborated on the wild pricing fluctuations, quote, "In some cases, memory costs have already increased by up to 3x, end quote, and asserted that they could increase 5x, writing, quote, "Costs less than $20 a year ago could exceed $100 by year end for top tier models," end quote. He highlighted how memory would historically get more affordable, writing, quote, "When something that used to get cheaper every year suddenly becomes a lot more expensive, the economics of building a smartphone fundamentally change," end quote. Pei said that those costs will ultimately be passed on to consumers, anticipating more increases next year, and saying that, quote, "Brands now face a simple choice, raise prices by 30% or more in some cases, or downgrade specs," end quote. Mirroring some of the PC hardware trends we covered in our Collapse of Personal Computing documentary, Pei said, quote, "Some markets, particularly entry-level and mid-tier segments, are likely to shrink by 20% or more," end quote. That matches what the PC hardware companies were telling us a couple months ago in that documentary, where a lot of them are shifting their focus to either the high-end or the ultra-low-end right now, with high-end seeming to get a lot of additional attention where it might previously not. It makes some sense in the sense that people who were wealthier and had money were spending more previously, and they still have money now, and they're still spending money now. And so that makes sense. Whereas people who are more constrained are less likely to be able to afford, you know, building a computer right now with the memory situation. If you're selling a case or a cooler, your $20 to $40 off the price isn't going to change the fact of whether they can buy the RAM or not. So that it tracks with what we've seen in the PC hardware space. And unfortunately, it seems like the end result of that is that all of this stuff, a lot of the companies are going to shift more and more to sort of the high-end safe haven, but that's going to have a secondary effect, which is depriving the lower-end, mid-tier, and budget markets of competitive choice, because there'll be fewer manufacturers focused there, at least ones who can compete reasonably, and that's, you know, that's what suppresses prices, is the competition. So it's kind of working backwards right now in a really abnormal way. But anyway, the reduction in spec is something we've also talked about over the last 6 or 7 months on and off, where one of the problems with what we're seeing right now is this is also going to serve as a reset of consumer expectations. So the next time there's some major generational uplift for devices, it's going to be after this reset, where companies that feel like they're at the max of what people will spend will be forced to stagnate on the specs, and that's going to give them a generation or two to kind of chill out on the upgrades, and the next time they do one, it'll look amazing. So there's some of that as well, where the consumer expectation resets, the data center companies continue their hold on memory, and eventually when it gets back to consumer, things that were not impressive previously will suddenly be very impressive, and that's unfortunate as well, because it slows progress. But we're also seeing this reflected in gaming handhelds as another place where that's a space occupied between PC and mobile. Valve has increased the prices of their deck handhelds because of the memory situation, the storage situation, where their 1 terabyte model went up by somewhere around $300 back in May. So up next, according to Alinea Analytics, within the first half of 2026, Steam set record numbers. Now, Steam is a private company, so they don't have public earnings reports to get this from. This is from an analytics company, but they claim that Steam amassed $11.1 billion in gross revenue, if their reporting is correct, and that makes it the platform's strongest half year to date, according to the analytics company. Valve is poised to have a banner year when you consider that the first half doesn't include the holiday season. To provide some context for how much $11.1 billion is for the digital storefront, according to Alinea Analytics, that's nearly as much revenue as Steam generated during all of 2021, its pandemic peak. Interestingly, only 21% of Steam's revenue came from games released this year. That means that nearly $4 out of every $5 or so came from older titles. In terms of 2026 releases, Forza Horizon 6 is leading the race, earning $197.7 million. Resident Evil Requiem followed closely behind at $195 million or so. Crimson Desert rounded out the third spot at $190 million. Alinea attributes the growth to factors like higher game prices and Steam expanding in Asia. As far as the relatively small amount of games in 2026 as part of the total revenue, I actually like that news, and I think that tracks with what we're seeing in the hardware space too. Where I for personally, the games I play right now, like Timberborn, which is a phenomenal and creative and unique game, by the way. If you like city builders, it's awesome. You should check it out. But games like that, well, that one's kind of CPU intensive once you get later game. But anyway, a lot of the best games right now, they tend to be from indie studios or smaller studios and teams. They tend to not have the most insane graphics in the world. You can play it on basically anything, or at least like, you know, a 10 to 20 series card would be no problem for a lot of these games. One of the most popular games in like the top 10 right now, I guarantee you, is going to be a 2D game. Like, you can check right now, top 10. I will put money down that there's an actual 2D game in the top 10 this moment. I think that's a good thing because, you know, it's just people play what's fun. And I think the AAA studios sometimes get confused and they're like, gaming is dying, even though it seems like everybody has record revenue except for us, Ubisoft. And then it's because they don't ship games, and the ones that they do ship are constantly loaded with problems, like when you pause the game, there's DLC. So anyway, up next, speaking of Steam, the Steam controller doesn't officially support X input, but there is a mod that supports it now. And this is from Safi Jari, who created a workaround. The modder says that using an inexpensive NRF52840 development board allowed the creation of firmware for the Steam controller that not only allows it to emulate X input, but also allows it to emulate PlayStation and Nintendo Switch controller layouts. He's calling the mod OpenPuck. Safi Jari, or Safi Hari, I'm not sure which, claims that it adds less than 1 millisecond of latency compared to Valve's official Puck. OpenPuck allows users to quickly switch between different input methods. The modder states, quote, at any point, you can hold all 4 back buttons and press X to switch over to Xbox mode, which maps all canonical inputs to their expected counterparts. In this mode, the right trackpad acts as a mouse, but at present, this only works in Android and SteamOS, end quote. OpenPuck has a ton of shortcuts listed on the GitHub page, including those enabling emulation of the Switch Pro controller, the DualShock 3, the DualShock 4, and more. Safi Hari also says that the Switch mode supports gyro and haptics, and that OpenPuck also works with real Switch and PS3 hardware. So it seems like OpenPuck doesn't give a puck what hardware you're on. And up next, ending this episode with 2 actually really fun user-created mods and stories, is a game cartridge mod. I've been following this one on Reddit. We haven't really covered it, I don't think, until now. I'm pretty sure we haven't talked about it at all, but I've been following the development of this. Really fun. So there's a Reddit user who goes by the name of Jibril Sama, who created a dock that mimics cartridge input for Steam games on the PC. On the PC Master Race subreddit, he posted, quote, got a couple of used 2.5-inch SSDs for cheap, so I decided to make a game cartridge system. Games are actually on those SSDs with a script to auto-navigate Steam to the game's page. Auto-starting the game right away is also possible, end quote. This, of course, is happening in light of the fact that Sony says it aims to cease production on physical copies of its games beyond 2028 because apparently people don't like owning stuff. It looks like a really fun project. I want to try it myself. I'm not sure exactly when I'll get time to do it, but now that it's fully documented, I probably will. Anyone can do it, though. He put all the information out there in the Reddit post, and you can 3D print the cartridges if you want, and then otherwise it's just SSDs. And actually, I was looking. So the user talks about 2.5-inch SSDs that are used, so SATA, being cheap, and I checked, and they are, in fact, pretty cheap. Now, downside, those are probably pretty abused, and SSDs do have a limited lifespan for how many times you can PE cycle the NAND. But if you're just storing, like, a game on it that theoretically you can kind of re-download at any point, and it's not going to be going through a lot of PE cycles because it's already there, probably not a big deal. And if it does get blown up at some point, probably not a big loss, especially if you got it for cheap. So anyway, fun project. We wanted to highlight it. Awesome job to both of those modders. And thanks for giving us something fun to cover this week as well. So that's it for this one. Thanks for watching. Subscribe for more. Go to store.gamersnexus.net to support us directly. And you can go to patreon.com/gamersnexus to throw a few bucks our way every month. We'll see you all next time.